KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in downtown San Francisco.
I'm in the Mission.
Oakland, 33rd and Telegraph.
Off Piedmont Avenue.
Border of Oakland and Berkeley.
Coming up, we'll hear a story about the little things that bring romance to life.
So I just made a heart out of some of the flowers that were in my garden that I had. She must have said something that alerted me that she really liked it. And so I had the idea, I'm going to do it every Monday.
And what happens when you let love grow?
My idea was to send them to my loved ones and to her loved ones. And it was remarkable what occurred after that.
Then we'll hear from the Oakland jazz harpist whose unlikely path to music was a thing of destiny.
You got to set the vision for yourself so high that it scares you.
Well, we're taking that leap on Cross Currents. Stay with us. Well, today is Valentine's Day, and to celebrate, we want to share with you a love story set here in the Bay Area. It's about an artist who many people around the music scene here have known for decades, Paige Hodel. She was one of the Bay Area's most popular DJs in the 80s and 90s. In fact, Paige is featured in a new photo exhibit celebrating that golden age of San Francisco nightlife. It's at the GLBT Historical Society. And one of the iconic images shows her spinning at a club called The Box. Well, Paige had a life outside of the music scene, of course, and the story we're about to tell is a part of that life. It's from KALW's Ben Trefney, who first told it several years ago, and he updated it so he could share it with us now.
Paige Hodel moved to Oakland around 2005 to a fixer-upper bungalow in the city's Laurel District. One day, she walked across the street and knocked on the door of her cute neighbor, Madeline Rodriguez.
And we fell just really instantly in love. I just knew right away. As soon as she opened the door, I knew right away.
How'd you know?
I don't know. I mean, it's so hard to put words on that, but there's just a feeling when, you know, and it, of course, as I got to know her right away, I felt like I was home. We used to joke about how she's the quietest person on the earth, and I'm the loudest person on the earth because I'm a disc jockey. You can't get a louder profession and a librarian. You really can't get a quieter one. But it was a really nice mixture for us.
They complimented each
other.
Yeah. And even though it was love at first sight, the DJ took the time to court the librarian.
You know, right away, I mean, even after our first date, I left her something on her doorstep the next morning, a little lunchbox with a little note and some chocolates in it. And I don't know exactly what gave me the idea to leave her a heart, but several weeks later, maybe, I don't know exactly what point it was, but I just was, you know, in my garden one day collecting things or doing, you know, cleaning or something, and pulled out some of the flowers, and I thought, oh, I'm going to go over there and just leave a little heart on her doorstep. So I just made a heart out of some of the flowers that were in my garden that I had cut. She must have said something that alerted me that she really liked it. And so I had the idea, I'm going to do it every Monday. I'll just start every week for her. So I work as a DJ at night on Sunday nights. So when I got off work really late, it was just, you know, I could tippy-toe across really quiet and find things. And so, you know, it sort of became this little ritual that I did. And you know, I just was so incredibly in love. My heart was just completely exploding open, and I just couldn't contain it. You know, when you feel that feeling in your life and in your body and your soul, you know, it's a really extraordinary feeling. And I just, I wanted to make sure she knew. I guess it was almost 7 months after we started seeing each other. And she, you know, put her hand to her side one day and said, I have a very strange pain. And we knew something was going on, but certainly not the extent of it. And within a couple of weeks, she was diagnosed with a very, very end stage 4 ovarian cancer. I made a heart for her the night before she passed, and I made two hearts together. I made two hearts so that she would see the two of us together. During the period of time right after she passed, I just couldn't do really much of anything at all, but I knew I could always make her a heart. I could always do that. And that really gave me, I think, something to hold on to.
Paige would make hearts out of anything she could find. Rubber bands, letterpress letters, flower petals, crayons, anything and everything. Always formed somehow into the shape of a heart. Paige and I are in the parking lot of a church near downtown Oakland. She saw a tree here the other day that inspired her to make a heart. Now she's up on a ladder, clipping off branches covered with green acorns and putting them in a bucket.
I'm not 100% certain.
This thing could clearly use the pruning anyway. I think you're doing them a favor.
I told them that I promised that I wouldn't take them all from one place, so.
Yeah.
You know, when somebody dies, you're asked to process something that you can't process, that your heart and soul refuses to say goodbye to someone you love, you know. Even with the nuts and bolts of, well, what the hell? I mean, you know, how could she be here? This person, this human being that I love, and then the next day she's not. Like, where did she go? Like, you know, where is that? Where's that? Where is that, you know? I want to know where she went. She's my lover. And these trees have the answer. Wherever she went is the same place that made these trees. You know, it's why I'm really connecting so intensely to nature, is that it's an unspoken answer, but it's an answer. You know, it's God, it's higher power, it's the creator, it's the source, it's, you know, whoever made these trees, these beautiful trees and these beautiful acorns. These acorns have a job. They hold this little seed and they have this magnificent job. They're just divine. And so was she, you know, and I just sort of feel like being close to nature has somehow allowed me to somehow stay close to her, because I don't know where she went, but it's probably the same place where these trees are, and the shells on the beach, and the sand on the beach, and the water and the ocean. And it's really, I think it's, I've held on to that for dear life. And I think it was about 4 or 5 months after she passed, I, you know, had continued to make them. I made them on her doorstep for a little while, and then started making them on my own doorstep, and then I made them on my kitchen table, or I started making them out in the world. I just was, you know, making them. And one day I, for some reason, took a photograph of one, and I had really no, I don't know what the impulse was, but I sent it to a friend of mine, just a you know, really dear old friend, on my cell phone. And she called me back, and she was crying. And I said, what's going on? And she goes, that picture is so beautiful that you sent. And then she said, I don't know how to really explain it, except that I can feel love in this picture. I can feel like little love vibrating off my phone screen. And I just, you know, I got goosebumps everywhere. And I thought, wow, maybe I should put this out in the world. And my idea was to send them to my loved ones and to her loved ones, and for them to feel free to send them to their loved ones and just kind of put it out. Let's just sort of put it out there. It was remarkable what occurred after that. It was just sort of like this delicious wave. And I started getting emails from people all over the world. People in South Africa, the hearts are going in Scotland, they're going to Australia, and people, strangers that I don't know, are sending me these just beautiful emails, and people were sending me hearts. People were making hearts on the beach for me and sending them back to me. I never imagined that would happen. I just unbelievable kind of flowing of love. You know, this really tangible love. So the materials kind of will talk and tell me what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are.
Paige is back home in her breakfast nook, standing at a butcher block table bathed in sunlight. She pulls a branch covered with acorns out of her bucket.
So what I inevitably do is, it's to allow the materials to speak. I have some idea of what could make sense to do with them, but as I work with them, they'll speak. I'll inevitably end up spending an hour or two just kind of playing with these little acorns. And what do you think about when you're just doing something really mundane over and over? You just start thinking about life and pondering, you know, analogies and metaphors and kind of learning. It's still very, very, very fresh. Well, somebody sent him to somebody who sent it to somebody who sent it to an agent in New York, and she, the minute she started getting them, she contacted me right away and said, this is just, you know, we have got to make a book out of this. And I initially said no. It was way too soon after Madeline passed. I had never even fathomed that this was going to be in the public, you know, per se. The intention was so very private. But when I started putting him out in the world through the internet, I started sort of getting this kind of awakening that, you know, maybe this was, you know, part of Madeline's and my purpose. You know, maybe this is why she and I met, is so that, you know, I don't know. You think all sorts of things, I guess. But I just sort of had this kind of awakening and said, you know, why not?
The heart starts taking shape. Paige has about 100 acorns spread out on her dining table, and she's moving them around.
I'll just sort of start messing with them, and all of a sudden when you run a magnet by something, and they all go, they all just sort of fall where they're supposed to fall.
By her count, more than 1,000 people signed up to receive her weekly emails, the Monday Hearts. And that gift Paige Hodel was sending out to the world, that gift was coming back to her in abundance, like in this email.
I'm sending you a heart that I made for my mom. She died unexpectedly on June 14th, less than a week before our whole family had planned on being away on vacation together. I know you understand grief and loss, and I wanted to share a small world experience with you. When I first saw your work, I sent my mom a link to your website because I knew that she would have loved your work. She didn't respond, so I will never know whether she got it. But while we were on vacation, I made her a heart out of the shells from the beach that I had walked on with my mother a year ago. I explained to my stepfather and my sister your story and how it touched me so deeply, and it turns out that my stepfather had given your book to my mother for Valentine's Day the year before. They loved your story, and they loved the work.
And you receive those almost every day?
I do. I mean, not to say that this is just one of a sea, this touched me so profoundly. But, I mean, things like this, people share with me.
And it kept happening for years. Every week, Paige sent out a heart.
You never know how far it really goes. Kindness, you know, putting goodness out in the world, you know, really, it does a lot. So we're all putting a little bit of love out there.
Paige's book's called Monday Hearts for Madeline. At the end, after 100 photos of hearts, hearts made of fuchsias, hearts made out of radishes, hearts made of candy corn and Christmas lights, hearts made of almost anything, there's a poem. No Monday will there ever be, from now until eternity, that you don't have a heart from me. Paige Hodel kept making Monday hearts for Madeline Rodriguez. And in making them for her, she made them for the world. So this love story doesn't end. In Oakland, I'm Ben Trefney for Cross Currents.
Ben used to subscribe to those weekly emails that Paige Hodel sent out, but a while back, he noticed they stopped coming. So he reached out to Paige this week to get an update on her story, and Ben joins me now in studio to tell us what happened. Hey, Ben.
Hi, Hannah.
So I'm excited to hear what happened. Tell us.
Yeah, well, it was great to get back in touch with Paige. And she made and shared those hearts for many, many years. There's more than 500 that she made altogether.
Mm.
They're so creative. And they were always her thinking about Madeline Rodriguez. So then a couple, 3 years ago, she started having this strong feeling like she wanted to fall in love again. She was hoping that could happen. And sure enough, a little while later, she met somebody. So during all this time, she keeps making these Monday hearts. But, you know, new relationship, it's getting a little more complicated. And she told me that she felt like this place that was in her heart where she made the Monday hearts, that same place was starting to be filled by somebody else.
By the new person.
Yeah. So one day, she's out on the Point Reyes Peninsula on a hike with her sister. And she's out in nature, which she loves so much and she puts into so many of her hearts and where she's so good at finding inspiration. And she finds this pile of earth that a gopher had made.
Hmm.
And she says, this is the next heart that I want to make. So she reaches down, she picks up some of the soil And she starts to get overcome with this feeling, she told me. She couldn't open her hands to let the soil out. And she realized that she was feeling something from Madeline, that she felt compelled to stop in that spot. And she remembered that Madeline's favorite song was this song by an artist named Laura Nero called Brown Earth, just like what she was holding in her hand, Brown Earth. So after some time, she's able to get past this feeling and she completes this heart in the trail. And she told me it was just so emotional. And after she finished, she just started to sob. But she felt like Madeline was telling her that it was okay at that point to stop sending those hearts out to the world. Mm-hmm. Like that she wanted her to go, not leave her behind, but that things were changing. And so since then, Hannah, she's still made some of these hearts, but she has made them for herself and for Madeline. She hasn't been sharing them with the rest of the public. But she also told me that over the past year, she's gotten this profound awareness of how that Monday Hearts project helped heal her heart from Madeline passing. And she called the hearts her lighthouse in the storm. And she says they were a gift from Madeline, that if she could hold on to that love, she'd get through it. And now she says that she still misses Madeline desperately, but her heart feels healed.
Ah, so beautiful. Thank you, Ben.
Yeah, thank you.
Morning came to the windows.
Ben Trefney is our news director, and you can find the Monday Heart story and see the images at klw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. And now a story from our project, Sights and Sounds of the Bay Area. When she was a child, Stephanie Lewis developed a strong connection to the harp after watching a performance on I Love Lucy. But it took decades for her to change her career, city, and even her name to fulfill her passion, music. Today, audiences know her as Destiny Muhammad, the harpist from the hood. Her new album, Sonic Legacy, is a tribute to the legendary jazz harpist Alice Coltrane. Destiny sat down with KALW's Janae Darden to discuss her journey from Compton to composer.
So take us back. When did you first fall for the harp?
I was 9 years old, growing up in Compton. We had just moved to Compton, literally from Asia. We had been living in Okinawa. And I moved to Compton, was living at my auntie's house in Compton, and they had sent the children to the living room so grown folks could talk. And I saw Harpo Marx on a show called I Love Lucy back in the day, and it was already in syndicate at that time. And I said, that's what I want to do when I grow up. I was nine. Now, growing up in Compton, there was no money, and it was the hood. And I ran and told my mother, and she said, you better be trying to shut up so I can figure out how to put food on the table for three little girls. So I didn't ask her again. And so it literally stayed tucked in the back of my brain for about 21 years. So we flash forward. By this time, I'm 30 years old, and I'm running a barbershop in San Pedro, which is just south of Compton.
Right.
And it too is in the hood. And I started dating a man whose best friend was a harp builder in a little town called San Juan Batista, like southwest of San Francisco.
Okay.
And I got my first harp at 30 and had to start out like all folks, starting with an instrument and literally starting out like a child, learning to read and starting out with those little tunes, as people call them, but they're incredible teaching tools. Twinkle, twinkle, the hot cross buns.
Wow.
You know, I started
from the basics.
Started from the basics, Yankee Doodle. I mean, those were the teaching tools.
You are known as, which is another thing that drew me to you when I first heard of you, harpist from the hood. Uh-huh. And we're talking about, you know, growing up in the hood. And I love that because that means a lot to me as somebody growing up from the hood. Where did you come up with that?
Girl, I used to play a series of farmers markets when I first got started. I mean, throughout Bay Area, Los Angeles, New York, Seattle. And I was playing at the Jack London Farmers Market. And I'm doing my thing, and I would treat my four-hour sets like I was literally playing on stage. And it said, and me, my name is Destiny. I'm your friendly neighborhood harpist from the hood, letting you know it is truly all good right here at the Jack London Farmers Market. And it rolled off, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's for real right there.
He said, that's it?
That's it. When that came off of the tongue, I was like, yeah, we running with that one.
How did you go from Stephanie to Destiny?
Wow, I got the download, if you will, that I had moved into this new state of who I was, and that Stephanie had taken me as far as she could, and that this was who I was stepping into. And so when I did, I announced myself as Destiny. When I got that download, that's who I am, then that's who I am. And I stepped into Destiny, literally making sure that all of my documents read as Destiny. Stephanie had taken me as far as she could, and I love her. And I speak to her sometime when there are things that I don't understand as Destiny, because as Destiny, I'm only 26. So Stephanie is like my 56-year-old mother. And Stephanie is like an ancestor and attached to God as I understand it, and speaking to the infinite in that way and getting information. And sometimes the way I get it is way different from others, but it's the way that I understand it.
So she's still a part of you and you have peace with her.
Absolutely.
We've traditionally been fed this image of a harpist. I'm just thinking about cartoons back in the day, you know, someone angelic, someone white. You know about that.
Yes.
So when you walk in those concert halls and we're thinking of what we've been told a harpist looks like.
Yes.
And we see this black woman, mm-hmm. you know, with the last name Muhammad. And some people may not make the connection, but that's still possible. How do people receive you?
It has run the gamut. I will say for the most part, it has been extremely positive and loving.
Good.
Extremely. I would say if there were 100 events and there was, what was the reception going to be, or who was a harpist, or my name wasn't there, and they saw the harp on the stage, and no one knew who it was going to be, and there's the expectation that there's going to be a beautiful white female who's going to walk up. And a harp is there, and I walk up. There's the batting of the eyes are getting big, or someone say, you know, the harpist is coming. I'll just say yes. You know, I'm not the first. Let's look at Alice Coltrane. And folks go, oh, wow, I forgot all about her. I said, let's look at Alice, and let's look at her. I call her big sisters, Dorothy Ashby, both of them, both coming out of Detroit. These were black women who played harp. And I said, and there are a few others of us that did it before who we stand on their shoulders.
You connected to her, you feel her.
Intensely. SF Jazz invited me to do the tribute, the first tribute that we did at SF mm-hmm. Jazz. They invited me to come and do the tribute. Girl, I was feeling Alice. When I got that email, to even go back that, 2016, I got the email, would you be interested in doing a tribute to Alice Coltrane? Girl, you could have pushed me over with a potato chip. I was touching the email, trying to touch the email. I was listening to her, and my husband had some books of hers, and looking at some of the books, and then just doing the research on Alice the woman.
So when did you know was the right time to make this album? Because this album is a tribute to her. Ooh. And I know that's big, to tribute to someone that, you know, you respect and who influenced you. So when did you know it was the right time?
Oh. I think after we did the first tribute with SF Jazz, I said, now is the time. And there could be no other time. When we did that first tribute, and then Chris Will and I, like I said, my husband, I always like to say his name. We said, we get to do this. For many of us, we don't let anybody tell us who our heroes and sheroes get to be. And we decided we would do a tribute to our hero, to our Shiro, to our saint. And so we just decided in 2018, we're going to bring it back, and we're going to really make sure that the tribute is going to happen, and we're going to make it into an album, you know. So we took the necessary steps, and we gave ourselves a year to license the music. We knew what music we wanted to do, and I created the narrative around it. And we said, we're going to make sure that we do this. I want to say it means the world to me, but it means to me that I am standing on the shoulders of an ancestor who didn't get the chance to have her legacy fully expressed, but a portion of my job on the planet is to make sure that that does happen. You got to set the vision for yourself so high that it scares you. You got to set it so high for yourself that it scares you, and you don't know how the ways and means are going to come for it to come to you. But the vision has to stay high.
That was Oakland jazz harpist Destiny Muhammad speaking with KALW's Janae Darden. Destiny's Storytime concert is this Sunday at the Malonga Cascalord Center for the Arts in Oakland. And if you want to make sure not to miss events like that, subscribe to our newsletter. It comes once a week, every week, and it'll catch you up on events from around the Bay Area. Do it at KALW.org and click Cross Currents. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.